Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, where I have been right and wrong about the NBA postseason as we're another round into this thing, down to the final four teams, plus my experiences traveling from over the weekend. Good to be back with you till 3 on this Tuesday afternoon. Plenty to get to throughout the week, but it was nice to be home. It was Father's Day this past weekend. Hopefully you had a great Father's Day. I want to circle back to that later on as well. But I was home, and not only for Father's Day, flew up to Connecticut, saw the family, got to spend Father's Day with my father, but also worked out because Saturday there was a get-together for a wedding celebration. One of my best friends, he probably was my very first friend, lived on the same street, knew each other since, you know, we could walk. He got married during the pandemic, and unfortunately, because of the pandemic, really nobody could go to the wedding. So he figured, you know, people are going to be around Father's Day weekend. He came back to Connecticut. He doesn't live in the state anymore, and had a bunch of people at his parents' house and, you know, celebration of the wedding for everyone that couldn't be there. And so I flew up to Connecticut, so I didn't have a car, right? So I had to get a ride. So I got a ride from a buddy of mine. And he has a daughter who's a year and a half, which is still weird for me. I'm still at the age where it is still weird for me to think of my friends like parents. But that's the case now. So he's married. He's got a daughter. So it's him, his wife, the daughter. They're picking me up. I realized after I texted them and asked, hey, can I get a ride? And they agreed. I was thinking about this later on. Like, should I have mentioned that I'm vaccinated? Are we at that point now? Right, because he's got a young kid. I'm not concerned about him, and he wouldn't be concerned about me. But when you have the young kid, like, is that something you have to offer up to people now? Like, hey, can I get a ride? By the way, I'm vaccinated. You don't have to worry about me sitting in the back seat with your child, right? I'm vaccinated. You don't have to worry about it. Now, we know kids, you don't really have to worry about the young children when it comes to COVID. And they're the safest of all. But still, people are very protective about their young children. You can understand why. Right? When you have a baby, when you have a newborn, they can get sick a little easier, and then things can take a turn. You know, you got to be careful. When it comes to COVID specifically, it's not a big concern. But I was wondering about that. And would it be out of line for them to ask if I'm vaccinated? To only be able to offer me a ride if I am vaccinated? Now, they were going to this gathering with the child. So you probably assume they're not too worried about it, because the kid's going to be around a bunch of people. You have no idea if they're vaccinated. And when you go to a get-together, you're not going to walk around asking everybody. Like, hey, are you vaccinated? Are you vaccinated? Okay, you are? All right, then you can touch my kid. You can play with my child. You can hug him. You can hold whatever. So, you know, I guess you take your chances anyways. They're already at that point. But I was wondering about that. You know, moving forward now, do you have to, like, let people know? If you're going over to a friend's house, they have a young kid or something, or maybe they have their mother that lives with them, you got to tell, by the way, I am vaccinated. And can they ask you, are you vaccinated? Are people going to do that? You're not vaccinated. Sorry, you can't come over. Are we at a certain point now where, you know, we're doing pretty good with all this? Because, you know, like, if you wouldn't want somebody that's just sick in general, or maybe around your kid, or, like, you wouldn't want, like, the dirty friend, right? The guy who's got bad hygiene. He got that one friend, you know, he, like, never showers. He doesn't take care of himself. Like, I don't know if I want him sitting in the back seat, you know, for a car ride, like, playing with my child. I don't know if I really want him around. I don't know if I want him to pick up my kid. It's similar here. Are you vaccinated? Can we let you around the kid? Now, over the weekend, the whole vaccine thing really became a big story at Cole Beasley. I don't care enough to talk about it. I've always said, I'm vaccinated. You don't want to get vaccinated? I don't care. I'm vaccinated. That's enough for me. You do whatever you want. But everyone up in arms over Cole Beasley choosing not to get vaccinated, wide receiver of the Buffalo Bills. I couldn't care less. Well, that's fine. Now, it means he's not going to have the same abilities away from, you know, I'm not saying on the field catching a football, but he won't be able to do some of the same things his vaccinated teammates can. He'll have to be in virtual meetings, and he won't be able to eat in the cafeteria. But, you know, if that's the route you want to, if you're willing to put up with all that stuff, then go ahead. Do it. I couldn't care less. And John Rahm won the U.S. Open after returning from a positive COVID test, which was a great story, and we'll talk about that coming up later on this afternoon. But when Rahm had tested positive for COVID and had to be removed from that tournament a couple of weeks ago, right, and people were saying, oh, that's what he gets for not being vaccinated. Have we had that same reaction with Chris Paul? Because Chris Paul's vaccinated. And last I checked, he still tested positive and is sitting out the most important games of his career. So how come we're not having the same reaction with him as we did with John Rahm when people were celebrating John Rahm losing out on $1.6 million? Serves him right. That's what he gets. He should be vaccinated. Well, I don't know. Chris Paul's vaccinated, and yet he can't play in the biggest games of the year. So there's always a chance you can test positive even if you are vaccinated. How about a little empathy instead? The guy missed out on $1.6 million and, by the way, couldn't be near his newborn child who was just born in the last couple of weeks. All right, let's humanize these athletes. That's a tough break for John Rahm, and I'm glad he won this past weekend. And hopefully Chris Paul gets back to the court as well. Anyways, we're another round deep into the NBA playoffs. We've done this after each round. We'll probably continue to do it. But I give you big opinions around here, so every once in a while I'll hold myself accountable. Because I'll brag, I'll let you know, I'll remind you when I get things right. I'll pat myself on the back. But we also want to be held accountable. That's why we take calls. That's why you can tweet the show. You can always call me out if I ever get something wrong or if you think I said something stupid or you disagree, whatever it may be. You can always call me out. I'm here to be held accountable. But we do it ourselves. I'll let you know where I was right, where I was wrong. We always start with a positive, where I've been right and wrong about the NBA playoffs.
Right.
There we go. Where I was right, the Utah Jazz. That they were more of a regular season team than a postseason team. They blew a 2-0 lead. They lost the last two games of the series without Kawhi Leonard playing. Don't have enough around Donovan Mitchell. He played great. Rudy Gobert was a mess. He's no good on the offensive end and defensively got shredded in the most important games against the Clippers. They tried to bring back Conley. He wasn't 100%. But the Jazz were one of those teams who were the number one seed. They had the best record in the league, right? Best three-point shooting team, all this stuff. But you knew, yeah, they're probably not going to win a championship. They're one of those teams, a young team that just tried harder than everyone else in the regular season and got the number one seed because of that. Won a couple, you know, won a series, won a few playoff games, but their ceiling was much lower than the NBA championship, and I knew the Jazz wouldn't do much in the West.
Where Luke was wrong.
At the same time, I thought the Phoenix Suns would fit that category. I thought the Suns were also one of those try-hard regular season teams. Turns out, I may be wrong. Now, with that said, we do have to acknowledge that the Suns may have the most beneficial run we've seen of a team to reach an NBA championship. Anthony Davis gets injured, right? And then Jamal Murray's injured. You don't have to worry about him in the second round. Now Kawhi Leonard is injured. I mean, you're taking away the second or, in this case, most important player from a team. Makes it a little bit easier. With that said, however, I have come around on the Phoenix Suns. They've won 8 straight playoff games. They got a nice trio. They added Chris Paul, so you have that veteran leadership. Devin Booker is fantastic. We saw him play great in Game 1 on Sunday. He's been excellent in the postseason. DeAndre Ayton should have a good series against the Clippers. They've got a good head coach. And if I was picking right now, in fact, I was texting some buddies about this yesterday, they would be my pick to win the NBA Finals at this point. I've come around on the Phoenix Suns. I was wrong on them. Now I think they really could win an NBA championship. I didn't feel that way about the Utah Jazz watching them in the postseason. I do think the Suns could be good enough to win the NBA championship. They should certainly get there if Kawhi Leonard does not play. And then you're already in the championship. You win one more series. You're champs. The Suns are more than just the regular season team I thought they were. They are more than just a team I thought was trying harder than everyone else. They actually really do have some ability. A nice trio, a good coach, the Paul leadership, the Booker stardom, and even the big guy in Ayton that can do some things around the rim. I was wrong on the Phoenix Suns.
Where Luke was right.
Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers may be the most overrated coach in NBA history. The guy has had a job for 20 straight years. He's never been out of work since he became a head coach. He's been hired by 4 different teams. As soon as he gets fired, someone else picks him up. Doc Rivers has the lowest win percentage in elimination games in NBA history. I'm not talking about most losses, because that could just be, he coached a long time, he's been in the playoffs a lot. No, I'm talking winning percentage, which speaks to how poor of a job he's done. He's won the fewest amount in terms of percentage of elimination games as any other coach all time. We know about the blown series. Only coach to ever blow 3-1 series leads. And now this year with the Philadelphia 76ers, they blew an 18-point lead, followed up by blowing a 26-point lead in the next game to the Hawks. Five of the last eight largest blown leads in the playoffs have been by Doc Rivers teams. Five of the last eight largest blown leads by the same coach. In Game 7, at home, Trae Young goes 5 for 23. You still lose at home when their star couldn't throw it in the ocean. Number one seed for the Sixers, they get bounced. Doc Rivers has that one championship that he's clinging to. And by the way, it was with a big three when there was no other big three in the league. He won with the most talented team in the league. Congratulations. They probably should have won more in Boston. Right, they got that one championship. It's like Brian Billick living off the one Super Bowl. Or actually more appropriate would be John Gruden winning off his one Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. Ever since then, he's been under 500. But we think he's this great coach because he won a Super Bowl. Right, well, he did it with Tony Dungy's team and one of the best defenses we've ever seen before. Doc Rivers won a championship with the best trio in the league that year. They should have won. Since then, he just blows a lot of playoff series. He did it again, and his response afterwards was great, where he said, well, the Sixers got swept last year in the playoffs, so this is an improvement. That's what he's selling us on. They did better. Yeah, they still lost in the playoffs this year, but at least they didn't get as embarrassed. At least they won a couple of games before they got knocked out. Doc Rivers, one of the most overrated coaches we've seen.
Where Luke was wrong.
I'll continue to take the yell on the Atlanta Hawks. I was wrong. I didn't even have them making it out of the first round. I was wrong about the Hawks again. They're in their second conference finals in their 50-year history. Third team to reach the conference finals despite being under 500 at the All-Star break. And I was wrong about Trae Young. I thought he'd be a star, a scorer, but not a winner. I didn't think he made guys better, turned the ball over too much, wasn't a good enough shooter, kind of more of a me guy, right? Always looking for his points instead of the betterment of the team. I was wrong. I mean, Trae Young is a star, and he can also win. To the point now where he played pretty lousy in Game 7, and the Hawks still won on the road because of the supporting cast. They had four other guys score at least 13 points. And Nate McMillan, he had gotten out of the first round once his entire career. He had never been in the conference finals before. I didn't think he'd even be able to make it past the Knicks this year. I thought he'd get outcoached. Instead, he outcoached Tom Thibodeau, the coach of the year. He outcoached Doc Rivers, this great coach you keep telling me about. And Nate McMillan is in the Eastern Conference Finals. I was dead wrong about the Hawks and what they could accomplish this postseason.
Where Luke was right.
The Clippers, to get to this point, now I have them going to the finals. Kawhi Leonard is injured. They probably won't do so. If Kawhi Leonard comes back and is close to 100%, I don't think he will. But if he does, then I still give the Clippers an opportunity. But without Kawhi Leonard, and we'll see how they continue in this series. But at least last series, the Clippers almost seemed better without Kawhi. Paul George stepped up. He didn't have to live in Kawhi's shadow anymore. It's not true. The Clippers are not better without Kawhi. They'd rather have Kawhi out there, but they almost seem like they are. They play more together. Other guys step up. Paul George looks like the star he was with the Pacers years ago. The Clippers still stand a chance. I had them going this far. I had them even going to the championship, but they're still standing. And we'll see if they could get past the Suns or if they could get Kawhi Leonard back. I thought the Clippers were the best team in the West on paper. And without Kawhi Leonard, we have seen the depth that they've had, the ability, the other guys stepping up, what Paul George is really capable of, and we'll see how hard, how challenging they can make it on the Suns this series, even without Kawhi.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Brooklyn Nets. I thought the Brooklyn Nets would win it all this year. I've been telling you that for months. Now, to be fair, with a healthy Harden or a healthy Kyrie, they're winning that series against Milwaukee, and I believe they'd still win the NBA championship if they had one or the other. They don't need all three guys. If they had two of the guys, they'd be winning. Hell, they would have won that series against the Bucks if Joe Harris could throw it in the ocean. Now, he was brutal. And Joe Harris, I was wrong about him. That was another wrong we could do. I thought Joe Harris, top shooter in the league this year. I thought he'd be big in the absence of Kyrie and James Harden. Obviously, he benefited greatly of the NBA, of the defense having to focus on three stars, and he's left wide open. Now, he got plenty of open looks this postseason as well. Couldn't knock him down. He shot like 25% from beyond the arc, I think even lower, 18% from beyond the arc against the Bucks. He was dreadful. Nobody else stepped up. James Harden at least tried to get out there, but he didn't play very well, and I don't think it was just hamstring related. No one except Kevin Durant came to play in Game 7 for the Nets. They had 0 bench points in Game 7. No points off the bench. Can't happen. Jeff Green, after his big performance in Game 5, didn't score a single point in Game 7. So, yes, I was wrong about the Nets, but we know the caveat. If they were healthy, they would win the championship this year.
Where Luke was right.
Number one seeds were pretenders. The Sixers and the Jazz, neither one making it to the conference finals. This is just the second time in NBA playoff history that the number one seed, both number one seeds, failed to reach the conference finals. We'll see if this is good for the NBA to have some new blood, to have the Atlanta Hawks in there, a team you weren't expecting, to have some teams that maybe don't have as big of fan bases or as interest in, not the top teams in the league. But I knew Philadelphia couldn't win a championship this year. I figured they wouldn't get past Brooklyn. And I figured that the Jazz, as mentioned earlier, more of just a regular season team. I was right in that the number one seeds this year really weren't the best teams in the NBA.
Where Luke was wrong.
Yeah, lastly, this steps away from the playoffs, but it just happened. Kemba Walker. I'll continue to take the L on Kemba, just like the Atlanta Hawks. I was very upset with the Hornets when they did not re-sign Kemba. But boy, was that a smart move. Because things have worked out pretty well for the Hornets. Now you have LaMelo Ball. That's a better option. He's younger. At this point, he's better. Kemba goes to Boston. Knees aren't the same. It's not his fault. It's not the Celtics' fault. Just injuries, body deteriorating. It's too bad. Because Kemba could be a hell of a player. And the Celtics over the weekend traded him away, essentially giving up a first-round draft pick just to get rid of Kemba and save $23 million. That's what they did. They traded away a first-round pick and Kemba, getting back Al Horford. It's the difference of only $23 million while giving up a first-round pick, essentially just to get rid of Kemba. Reports were he did not like Brad Stevens. They didn't get along. He didn't have a great time in Boston. They just wanted to unload him. And now he's someone else's problem. Probably won't even stay there. They'll probably get rid of him. Right? It was OKC that traded for him. They'll probably dump him as well. He'll wind up somewhere. You hope he can stay healthy and help somebody out moving forward. It's sad. I'm a UConn fan. I love Kemba Walker. He was a great player in Charlotte, but he's not the same now because of the knee injuries that are just deteriorating on him. And I was wrong about the Hornets. Hindsight being 20/20, they made the smart move, not committing long-term to him, moving on. It has worked out pretty well for the Hornets. Coming up, we do a – that's where I was right, where I was wrong about the NBA playoffs. Every Tuesday, we do a top 10 list. We'll get to our Tuesday top 10 when we come back, plus my experiences traveling over the weekend. It's always an adventure. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do it, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Our Tuesday top 10 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. So the Stingrays won the Eastern Conference Finals last night. They're heading to the Kelly Cup. The Kelly Cup coming to the, whatever it is, North Charleston Ice Coliseum, wherever they have to play right now.
Carolina Ice Palace.
Oh, is that what it is? The Carolina Ice Palace? That sounds much better. I mean, that is kind of a shame. I'm sure they would pack out the place. They're going to fill up this place, only fits like 500 people, whatever it is. You're going to be playing these championship games in this small arena. If you played in your normal arena, you get a nice home ice advantage. But hey, at least the Stingrays are there.
In a much bigger crowd.
What? Where?
In the Coliseum.
Oh, right. That's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah. I know. Now it's going to be like, soccer moms and a birthday party going on at the whatever it is. South Carolina, what was it called?
The Carolina Ice Palace.
The Carolina Ice Palace, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How often?
They might want to have a little talk with you after that. So. Yeah, because that is their practice facility, too.
Well, there's a reason why they only practice there, and they usually don't play games. Now, it's out of their hands. I'm not trying to give the Stingrays a hard time. It's not their fault that they can't play in their arena. It's a bit of a shame, but, hey, if they win the Kelly Cup, so what? Hoist it in the Carolina Ice Palace, whatever it is. How often do you go skating? How often have you been ice skating?
I've never been ice skating.
You have never been ice skating?
Luke, I've lived in warm weather my entire life.
Well, we got the Stingrays, three-time Kelly Cup champions.
I've done plenty of roller skating and rollerblading.
Okay. Never gone ice skating. Wow.
I know you growing up in the Northeast, that's, you know, unheard of, but...
Would you want to go ice skating?
Sure, I would try it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't been ice skating in years. I think if you put me on skates today, it would be embarrassing. I don't think I could actually get out there and move very well. It's been a long time. And I gotta be honest, I wasn't really the biggest fan of ice skating. I mean, it's kind of cool as a kid. The skates always seemed to hurt my ankles, and I wasn't really all that into it. We used to play roller hockey in the street, put on the roller blades, and we play street hockey. That was a lot of fun. But, yeah, I haven't put skates on in a long time. If I put skates on today, I would embarrass myself. I'd fall over. I'm not a big ice skating guy, but at least I've been out there. I'm shocked. Now, since, you know, I've lived in Florida, I lived here in South Carolina, and it does seem odd. And when I lived in Florida, there was a skating rink down the road as well, and sometimes people would go there. But it did feel weird, you know, being here in the South and like going ice skating. But I know people do it. And obviously the Stingrays, right? Three-time Kelly Cup champions. They're back in the Kelly Cup again. You got a nice hockey team around here. People are into it. They do very well. They sell a bunch of tickets. People support that team. So even here in the warm climate, you got people into hockey or just getting out on the ice, doing a little skating. We'll have to do that. We'll have to get Joe out on the ice for the show. So over the weekend, I went home. This is obviously my first time back on air since Wednesday. And it always feels odd taking a few days off. It feels like you have to work some rust off, right? You got to get back into the groove. So I was gone for a couple of days over the weekend. Traveling is always very interesting. We'll get to the top 10 in just a moment. But do you ever have people, when you go on vacation, doesn't it seem like you always have people that follow you around? Like if you go to a resort, isn't there always that obnoxious couple that you just can't seem to get away? You go out to the pool, they happen to just be set up at the chairs like next to you. And they're very loud and annoying, right? You go out to dinner, they get seated at the table next to you. It's like, man, we can't get away from these people. Maybe they even try to be friends with you. And it's like, they seem very annoying. We're just trying to relax. We don't want anything to do with them. And you can never get away from these people. So yesterday, I was flying back here to South Carolina, and I was running behind. The Morrow family is notorious for always running behind, and I'm just as guilty. Bobby gives me a hard time. I'm running behind. So I got to the airport yesterday about 40 minutes before my flight, right before takeoff. So I'm rushing. I got to get to the gate, and I had to check my bag. I had to print out the ticket. I had to do this. Well, you know, you got to go through security. So I go up to the counter to get my boarding pass and to check my bag because the airline I flew, a new airline, you can't bring a bag on the plane. You have to check it. So I don't have a choice. All right, I got to go check my bag. There's this family here. I'm literally waiting. I have only 40 minutes. I spend 15 minutes waiting behind this family. No regard for anyone else. They got two kids in a stroller. They're doing this. They're doing that. They can't find their ID, right? Their license. There's some confusion. They're moving at a snail's pace. I'm standing there thinking, I'm going to miss my flight because these people don't know what they're doing. They get everything taken care of. I get up to the counter. I do my business. All right, I got to go to security. I get to security. Of course, that family that was just in front of me was a mother. It seemed like her two parents. And then her two kids. And they were young. They were still in the stroller, right? So they're two young kids. So they, of course, are ahead of me in security. I think, oh, boy, here we go again. They get up to security. The five of them, they're fumbling around like their passport, their ID. Here's the kids. This is their ID. Oh, let me see if I have her verification, whatever it is. I have all everyone's boarding passes. Here's my five people. It was a cluster. Then they start having a conversation with the security agent, right, with the TSA agent. And they're saying, what age are they? Oh, that's a good age. Wait until they... And they're chit-chatting. And we're all waiting there. All these people try to catch a flight. Like, we don't have time for this. And they're talking, what stroller you have? Oh, that's a good stroller. How about that? You ever check out that? Nobody cares about your strollers. Hey, get moving. You got to go through security. So they go through security. Then I get up. I got to give my ID. I got to give my, the ticket for the flight. Which they don't even check anymore. They don't care. They just want to see your ID. You don't even have to be getting on a plane anymore to go through security. But... I saw that family. They went to one of the security conveyor belts, if you will. I said, I'm staying away from them. I went somewhere else. I'm not going behind. They're taking forever. They don't know what they're doing. I get through security, and I'm never going to be one of those people running through the airport. I'd rather miss my flight than run through the airport. That's just not me. I'm not going running through the airport like this is Home Alone. But I'm a fast walker because I take long strides anyways. So I'm hustling to the gate. I get there just in time. They call last boarding as I'm getting in line. I made my flight by a couple of minutes. I get on the plane. I think, oh, good. I got it. I settled down. I'm sitting there waiting. We're about to take off. Sure enough, who comes on the plane? The same family that I just can't elude. I can't get away from. They're coming on the plane. They're trying to carry on this two-seat stroller. It's bumping into seats. It's bumping into everybody. They got to try to pack it up and fit it in the overhead bin, and they're trying to corral their kids, and they're screaming, and, oh, you sit over there. And sure enough, I'm sitting there as they're waiting to close the doors thinking, oh, great, nobody is sitting next to me. I got an open seat on this flight. I got the whole row to myself. And the last people to get on this plane was this family that held me up at the check-in counter, taking all their sweet time. They're not only the last people to get on the plane, they, of course, have to sit right next to me as well with their two screaming kids and the mother with no care in the world, right, lollygagging around with her stroller, bumping into everybody, taking all their sweet time at security and everywhere else, and they have to sit right next to me, and I had to deal with them for the whole flight home. Whenever you go on vacation, there's just always these families you just can't avoid. You go out to dinner, they're seated next to you. You go out to the beach, they just happen to be seated there next to you as well. They want to be friends with you. They think, oh, these people are annoying. I don't want anything to do with them. That was my experience yesterday. So we do a top 10 list every Tuesday. Got me thinking, what are the 10 most annoying things about flying? It's this week's Tuesday Top 10.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Now, I'm not a bad flyer. I know people in my life. I have a friend who had a fly over the weekend. He doesn't like flying. He's got to take, you know, the pills to knock himself up. Wake me up when we're there. My grandfather didn't like flying. I've never had an issue with it, but I do have an issue with some of the behaviors around the flying. 10 most annoying things about flying. Number 10 is security. Now, it's a necessary evil. I have to put it on the list, but I only put it at 10. I appreciate being kept safe. I want to make sure I'm getting on a plane. I don't have to worry about anything else other than landing at my destination. So I appreciate security. But if we're being honest, right, it is a little bit of a hassle. You got to take your shoes off. You got to take your belt off. You got to take your hat off, your jacket. You got to take the laptop out. You need a separate bin for the iPad. Everybody's in a rush. You feel like you're being forced to rush, right? Because everyone's like me yesterday. They're late for a flight. You have plenty of time. You could take your sweet time. But, you know, everyone's rushing you. Like, come on, we got to go. We got to catch a flight. And you're trying to get everything unloaded. Your shoe is knotted. You can't get your shoe off. Security is just a pain. It's a necessary evil, so I only put it at number 10. But if we're all being honest, it's tedious. It's a pain to go through. I appreciate being kept safe. I have no issue with the TSA. I'm always very courteous. Oh, thank you. But still, you got to take your shoes off. Then you're running late for your flight. You got to gather all your things. You got to put your shoes back on. You got to put your computer away. It's like, oh, just get me to the gate.
And then while you're doing all that, the TSA agents are justifying the joke that TSA stands for thousands standing around.
Yeah, I mean, we always see the people that try to test the TSA, and they say, oh, I got this on a plane, I got that on a plane, and that doesn't make you feel any better. It's a necessary thing. I don't know, maybe we could do a better job of it, but security is just a pain. Number 9 of the most annoying things about flying, the chatty seatmate. Now, this may make me seem like a jerk, but I actually looked it up. It's one of the most frequent complaints about flyers is the person that sits next to you that wants to talk the whole time. Most people, when they get on a plane, right, maybe you're not a good flyer. You're too nervous. You don't want to be talking to somebody. You're stressed out. I don't know. Maybe you got stuff on your mind. Maybe you're going home for a funeral. You're not in a good mood to be talking to some stranger sitting next to you. All these movies always make flying look like the most fun thing. You watch a movie with George Clooney and Julia Roberts, and they're laughing, and they're having a great time, and, oh, I can't wait for my next flight. And no, that's not how flying goes. It's annoying. You have no leg room. You got a screaming kid in the back. You got this person next to you talking to you the whole time. You just want to put your headphones in and relax. So I'm sorry. Chatty seatmates, that's the number 9 worst thing. And I remember when I flew to a UConn bowl game, back when they actually made bowls, and I went to a bowl game in Charlotte. I don't remember what bowl it was. And one guy, this was back in the early days of noise-canceling headphones, and the very first headphones, they were noise-canceling because they were almost like speakers. It would you could hear whatever they're listening to. Not only could he hear it on the inside of the speaker, but it would also project it out. That's how it would cancel out the noise, because it would be the noise around you. And there was this guy on this flight who was, he was at the top of the plane. We were in the back of the plane. He was in the front. We were in the back. We could hear it all his music from the back. That's another one. So not only like the chatty seatmates who are talking, but also people that are playing music out loud. The kid's got the iPad with the sound on. He's playing games. You can hear none of that. Now, use headphones. Don't talk. Be courteous. Let other people relax on their flight. Number 8 of the most annoying things about flying, having to get to the airport so early. Now, I should have gotten there earlier than yesterday, and I usually do. I had to scramble. But do we really need to get there 2 hours early? It shouldn't be such an ordeal that you have to check in, you got to check your bag, then you got to go through security, then you got to find your gate, and in certain airports, you got to take a shuttle to your gate. It shouldn't take 2 hours just to get to the gate. And I used to work for a team where their head coach was a basketball team, a college basketball team. Their head coach was neurotic about that. He wanted to make sure he was at the gate 2 hours before flights, and he was the one in charge. So we would leave the hotel like 3 hours before the flight. It would take us 15 minutes to get to the gate. We're sitting there for 2.5 hours. There's that happy medium. You don't want to be rushing like I was yesterday, but you also don't want to be sitting in an airport for 2.5 hours. You want to find that nice happy medium. Give yourself about an hour, maybe an hour and a half for a big airport. You get to your gate about a half hour before boarding. You settle in, you get ready. That's nice. Number 7, the most annoying things about flying. The people that line up to board the plane. Every airline has their own procedure. You're either in group A or B or zone A or 1, 2, 3. Southwest is their things. You line up. You're B23. You line up. Wait your turn. What is the big rush to get on the airplane? Especially when I check a bag, when I don't have to worry about getting my bag in the overhead. I guess that's the reason why everyone wants to rush on the plane. I'm the last person on the plane. I don't want to sit in that seat any longer. But the people always stand up, right? You always see these people. Maybe you're one of them. You stand up. You don't actually get in line, but you stand just next to the line. And as soon as they call your zone, boom, you're the first person there. Right? Once it's zone 3, you're already there. You step right into line. Right, come on. What difference does it make? Unless you're battling for the overhead luggage space, right, who cares how quickly you get on the plane? Okay, we're going to begin the boarding process. Everyone stands up, and they just walk over there and stand around the entrance waiting for their zone to be called. Just wait your turn. Go sit down. When they call zone 3, then you can get up. You can get in line. Number 6, the people in the airport that stop in the middle of the walkway, that have terrible airport awareness. Right? They're looking around for the closest Sbarro's. They stop and everyone's hustling. You got to catch a flight. You're in a big airport. There are a bunch of people moving, and you know somebody just stops in the middle of the walkway, and you're hustling. And they just stop right in front of you. You're gonna bump into them. Get out of the way. Get to the side. You're looking for, P.F. Chang's. Go find a menu. Go find a directory. Go somewhere else. Don't just stop in the middle of the walkway and look around. Like, oh, where's the bathroom? Get to the side. Get out of the way. Number 5 of the most annoying things about flying. People with the big carry-on luggage. Check a bag. I had to check a bag. It was $20. You're already paying for the flight. What's another $20? These people bring their whole life into a suitcase, and they're trying to cram it into the overhead compartment. It's like Ben Stiller in Meet the Parents, right, where they're trying to take the luggage away from and he's trying to cram it in there and try to fit it in the overhead bin. Just check your bag. If you're bringing that much stuff onto the plane, right, just put it underneath. Why do you need to carry it on? And then they take it down. They need somebody, hey, can you help me get that? And then they're hitting the person in the seat. They hit them in the shoulders because it's too heavy. They can't take the thing out of the overhead bin. Just check the bag. People line up. They're looking for there's no space for my big bag. Then they're trying to jam it in there. Everyone's rushing on the plane so that you could beat the other people for the overhead space. Just pay the $20. Check your bag. It's not a big deal. And you have to wait 10 minutes afterwards at baggage claim. So what? So stop with this trying to cram all this stuff into the overhead bin. Number 4 of the most annoying parts about flying. Skipping the process, the line to get off the plane. It's very simple how this works. Now, I will say there's an exception. If you're running late, you got to catch a flight. All right, I understand. Go ahead, get off the plane. The majority of the time, people are not catching flights. They're just impatient. There's a very simple process for deboarding the plane. You just go row by row, right? That's it. The first row goes, okay, once people from both sides, okay, now the second row. You get up, you get your stuff, you get off the plane. I can't stand the people that get up as soon as the plane lands. They're in the aisle, and they're walking towards the front. Now you wait your turn. And especially when you refuse to let the people out of their rows. It happened to me yesterday. We're going row by row. We get to my row. I had a window seat. So the person next to me tries to get up. Nope, people are walking, cutting them off. No. You let the people out of the aisle in front of you first before you go. Unless, like I said, you're about to miss your flight. You got to go run to the next gate. That's an exception. It's usually not the case. Wait your turn. Stop cutting in line to get off the plane. Nobody wants to be on that plane. But wait your turn. If you wanted to get off the plane faster, upgrade for a seat at the front of the plane. Number 3, reclining your seat. This is always a no-no. It shouldn't even be an option on planes. On buses, on planes, any sort of like public transportation, don't recline your seat. There is no leg room to begin with. And when you recline, it's even worse. Plus, there's been instances where people have had like their laptops on the table, and when you recline, you know, it like breaks the laptop or knocks their food over. They got like hot soup on their little table there that comes down from the seat. Somebody reclines, it throws everything out of whack. There is no leg room to begin with. Don't recline your seat. There's a reason why some company created a product now that you could actually put on the back of the seat and it keeps the person from reclining their seat. There's a reason why this product had to be made, because nobody should be reclining their seats on an airplane. Number two, babies. Sorry, your kid may be adorable. You may love your child. They may turn out, they may become the president one day. They may be a great kid. I don't care. When I'm on a plane, the last thing I want to hear are screaming kids or crying kids the whole time. There is nothing more annoying. All right? So your babies are number two on the list about the worst part about flying. And I'm sure they annoy the hell out of you, too, the first time you take a kid on a plane, he's crying the whole time. That's not enjoyable for you, but at least it's your child. You're the one that loves him. The other people on the plane couldn't care less about your child. They're never going to see him again. Right? And they don't want to hear your crying baby the whole flight. And number one, the most annoying thing about flying, delays, obviously. Right? You have that connecting flight, and for things out of your control, even if it's weather, that's annoying. But when it's not weather, when it's something with the plane, when the airline is running late and you're going to miss your flight, and even if they give you the refund, even if they pay for another flight instead, it's like, oh, well, I got flying out at a night. You ruined my whole plan. I had to get in at this time. Now I'm going to get in later. Now I have to spend the night at the hotel, fly out tomorrow morning. Delays are the worst. One time, fortunately, it was a direct flight, but our flight took off an hour late. I was flying out to L.A. Cross-country, it's already a six-hour flight. We took off an hour late because the pilot was late. The pilot came running. We were all standing around like, what's going on? When are we going to board this thing? Here comes the pilot with his luggage coming. Sorry, I'm late. Let me get on this plane and get ready. It's like, well, you know, thank goodness this was a direct flight. But for people that have to connect, they're going to probably miss their next flight because the pilot's running late. That's the one thing you can't do as a pilot. Well, I guess the most important part is making sure you get there safely. But get to the airport on time for your flight. It wasn't even a case of he was on another flight that was late. And that's not the case. He's not getting off one plane, hustling to another, and flying that one. That's not how their job works. He was late. He was stuck in traffic, they said. Some nonsense like that. Delays are the worst. The 10 most annoying things about flying.
Okay, Trent and I were just talking when you mentioned about the reclining of the seats.
Yeah.
Okay, you've never flown cross-country or overseas, have you?
I've flown cross-country, not overseas.
Yeah, you definitely want that seat reclined a bit for a while.
I have
especially
never
reclined if you're on an eight-hour flight. Yeah, you definitely want some, you know, a bit of comfort.
I have never. If you want comfort, don't go on an airplane. I have never reclined a seat. I'll never do it, and I can't stand the people that do it in front of me. There's no leg room to begin with. Now, I never have flown to another country. But I have done cross-country a couple of times. So like a six-hour flight. Still didn't recline my seat. Right? You want to recline your seat? Go in first class. Get more space for you if you want for that long flight. You can't do it. Can't recline the seat. There's no room to begin with. You got to be courteous to your fellow flyers. That was my experience flying. And the other story was when I landed in Connecticut last week. When I left South Carolina, landed in Connecticut, I'm waiting for my luggage. Some lady comes up to me. She's an older lady. She comes up to me. Now, we all have our masks on. You have to wear the mask in the airport. She comes up to me, and she says, excuse me, sir, are you Larry? And I said, no, I'm not Larry. And she said, okay, I'm supposed to be picking up a Larry, and he looks a lot like he's got the same build as you. He's about your size, you know, just as tall as you. I thought you were Larry. I said, no, I'm not Larry. She walked away. She had to go, oh, I got to go find him. What situation are you in where you're asking strangers at luggage if they're Larry? Now, if you're picking up some stranger, I get it, but she even knew what this guy looked like. Who's walking around asking, are you Larry? Are you Larry? You kind of look like Larry. Do you happen to be Larry? How do you not know the person you're picking up? And it wasn't like a limo service. She wasn't standing there with a sign. It was a sweet old lady that was picking up probably her grandson. Maybe she hasn't seen him in a long time. She was walking around asking all the guys that were as tall as me. Wait a minute, are you Larry? Am I supposed to be picking you up? I don't know what was going on. And then I saw them sitting out. She found Larry. I got to be honest, I was offended when I saw what Larry looked like because he didn't look like me. I'm much better looking than Larry. And they were sitting out on a bench outside as I was getting into the car, and I saw them just sitting there talking. I don't know what was going on there. I don't know what this old lady and Larry were up to, but I felt like I was getting scammed. Someone's coming up to me asking if I was Larry. I'm like, what does this lady want? She's trying to scam me. She's going to take me outside and rob me. So fortunately, I got home safely, and then I got back here safely. I went home for Father's Day. When we come back, we'll talk about Father's Day coming up. That's our Tuesday Top 10 that we do every week. It's always interesting traveling, right? It's never simple. And those are the 10 most annoying things about having to fly. Coming up, the best fake fathers. We did this at Mother's Day, talking about the best TV moms. It's only fair we talk about the fathers as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the best TV dads of all time after celebrating Father's Day this past weekend. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I just gave you my Tuesday top 10, the 10 most annoying things about flying after my travels this past weekend. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or through our new app. Just search ESPN Charleston however you get your app to the App Store, Google Play. And stream the show live through the app or listen on demand at any time with the podcast available through the app. MarketWatch did a survey about flyers, travelers. 90% of their participants said that they are unhappy with the traveling, with the flying experience. I can understand why, right? I mean, now, I've always said I'm still to this day amazed about flight itself. Louis C.K. always does the bit, right? 100 years ago, you had the Oregon Trail, more than 100 years, however long ago, where it would take you 6 months to go cross-country, and you hope just to be alive when you got there. You knew, like, some of us aren't going to make it there on this trip. I mean, some of us are going to die on the way there. Hopefully, we're going to make it. Now, you sit on a plane, you watch a movie, and you're cross-country in a few hours. So I am still blown away by flight and the easiness of getting from one place to another, but the process can be a real inconvenience. 28% of travelers said that researching and booking the travel is the most stressful portion. 49% said the most stressful part was pre-boarding, and which includes the checking in and going through security, all that sort of stuff. Additionally, and these numbers add up to much more than 100, so I don't know how this works, but I guess you could pick more than one. But it said 39%, I guess when it came to the flight itself, 39% of people, their biggest concern was sitting next to someone who was coughing. 28% said sitting next to somebody who has BO. 14% said sitting next to someone who's overweight. And 40% of people that were surveyed said they would pay extra to have an entire row to themselves. So yeah, I'm not the only one. You get on a plane, nobody wants to be bothered. And there's a lot more numbers to go along with this as well, but you know, flying always comes with the inconveniences. Now, it was Father's Day this past weekend. That's why I did go home to go celebrate Father's Day. If you're a sports fan, and I imagine you are, if you hang out with us each and every day, that may stem from your father. Maybe your mother, maybe a grandfather, an older brother, somebody in your family, right? Usually that's how it goes. They got you into sports. Maybe it was a friend, somebody at school. But a lot of times it's that relationship you have with your father. And I talked about it at the time at Mother's Day, about my mother in particular. She was the only woman in the house. So, I mean, God bless her. It's always about sports all the time. And she had to put up with it, and she's always been a great trooper about it. But that all stems from my father. The reason why I'm here, why I'm the sports fan I am, why I root for the teams I do, why I have the knowledge, to remember the history of sports over the years, from everything that's happened or that I've seen, it all comes from my father. Right, we have to make sure we're watching football on the weekends. Whenever there's a basketball game on, we're watching it. You're watching everything. Right? Grown up to be a diehard Red Sox fan, Vikings fan, all that sort of stuff. All comes from my father. My brothers are the same. It's sports all the time. We're obsessed with sports as a family. It all stems from my father passing that down. And it's something I appreciate. Right? Some people may not like it. I appreciate it. I'm glad. But I always think back, and I was talking to another father about this a couple weeks ago. I always think back. At the time, I thought it was normal, and then I kind of talked with my other friends and realized how lucky I was. But the amount of games that we went to growing up and the effort my father made. I mean, we would drive to New Jersey. We grew up in Connecticut. He would drive us to New Jersey to go see the Nets back when they had Jason Kidd and Richard Jefferson and Vince Carter, you know, 20 years ago. And that was like a 2.5-hour drive. And then he'd drive there, drive back. It'd be like during the week. He'd get up, work the next day, right? We'd go to Fenway Park to go to the Red Sox a couple of times a summer. Same idea. On a work night. Drive back. We get home at midnight, 1 a.m., whatever. He's getting up for work the next day. The money he's spending on tickets to take me and my two brothers, the time we're traveling, our vacations. We would go see different baseball stadiums throughout the country. Always appreciated that. And at the time, he always thought that was normal. Then I talked to my friends and like, oh, I've never been to a Red Sox game before. I was like, really? We go a handful of times a summer. And, oh, no, my father, he works. He doesn't want to drive to Boston. Right? My father was always willing to do so. Get us there and go to the game, come home at 1 o'clock, get up, work the next day. So I always appreciated that, especially because my brothers and I were so obsessed with sports, right? You wanted to go see the guys. I saw Michael Jordan back in the day. We saw him live a couple of times in the 90s. And all those great experiences. I always appreciate that. As the diehard sports fan. And, of course, he's a big sports fan, so he didn't mind, I'm sure, actually being at the games. But the effort for us to get to have all those experiences and opportunities, to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame, right, to make vacations based around it. Always appreciate that. So it's nice to be able to be with the family for Father's Day. We have a short amount of time here before the top of the hour, but I was thinking about the best fathers in TV history because we did this with mothers as well. And really, there aren't a ton of great fathers I would think of in TV because the whole thing about the sitcom is the mother is great, the father is the big goof, right? Kind of like The Simpsons. And that's not a sitcom, it's a cartoon, but it's the same idea. The mother, right, she keeps the family together. She's the wise one. She's the straight character. And the father is the big idiot who's real goofy and is always getting the family into predicaments.
Unlike the early days of television when you had shows titled Father Knows Best.
That's true.
And you had the Ward Cleavers and things mm-hmm. like that. You know, sort of the prototype TV dads.
That's true. Well, that was what I was thinking. Recently, like going back the last, I don't know, 30 years?
Yeah, 30, 40 years, yeah.
It's hard to come up with some. Now, you could go back to early 90s. You had Uncle Phil. He was a father. He was the uncle to Will Smith. But Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Philip Banks. All right, that was a good one. Carl Winslow in Family Matters. Same time frame, early 90s. Those were really the only two I could come up with. And then more recently, you had like Phil Dunphy in Modern Family. You currently have like Dre Johnson in Blackish, I think is a good TV father. That's about it. Otherwise, you got to go way back to, like, Happy Days and The Brady Bunch and different shows like that. Danny Tanner, Full House. Danny Tanner would be towards the top of the list, right? Single father, chaotic house. He's got these crazy daughters, got a kid. He's got his buddy, the uncles living in the house. He's got all the family. He takes care of everyone, and he's always so calm, and they always learn a lesson by the end of the show. So that'd be a good one as well. But the great TV fathers, they're not around as much. Now it's like the anti-heroes. Now you have Walter White in Breaking Bad. But I would tell you, to go that far, you know, for your family to become a drug lord, I think that's actually being a good father. I wouldn't recommend that activity, but hey, you got to do what you got to do for the family.
How about Jacob Park's character in Fresh Off the Boat?
Yeah, I've never seen that show. You've referenced that a few times. I've never watched it. But that could be a good one. And Red Foreman is another one that loved that 70s show. Red, I don't know if I want my father to be like Red, but you always hear from people who grew up in that era that say he really captured what a father was like back in the 70s.
Yeah, my dad, Red is kind of a funnier version of my dad.
Yeah, so you hear that from a lot of people. Oh, yeah, he reminds me so much of my father. And that's how fathers used to be. Now a little more maybe loving or doting.
Or what about Jack Arnold from The Wonder Years?
Yeah, that would be another one. And Howard Cunningham from Happy Days. Now, I grew up with a Cunningham family, and the father of the Cunningham family I grew up with, he was Richard, right? You know, Richie Cunningham from Happy Days. And so this father was Richard, and I was told he would go to a convention every year where they would get all the Richard Cunninghams together who were fans of Happy Days. And they would all just go hang out because they're all Richie Cunninghams. And this guy in my town used to apparently go every year. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Hopefully you had a great weekend celebrating. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.